Iowa everywhere.
Chris Williams.
Chris
Hassel.
Two guys named Chris.
Presented by Fairway Meat and Grocery.
From the Channel Seed Studios, this is Iowa Everywhere.
Channel Seed. Seedsmanship at work.
Special edition of Two Guys here on Iowa Everywhere, presented by Fairway, Channel Seed Studios. No Chris Williams today, but it's not every day that Iowa makes a national championship game, though it is every year, I guess, the last couple. So Chris Hassel joined by Matty Van Winks, who was also up late watching the game last night. We're going to do a full show on Sunday. Me and Williams, and I believe Aiden Wyatt is going to fill in for you, Matty Van Winks. So we'll do the full show there and preview the national championship game and talk more about, you know, the men's tournament and all that. But today I just felt like it was such a huge moment last night that we should give some reaction. I think people are craving. Yeah.
There's too much going on right now.
Iowa Hawkeye women's basketball talk. Especially with the quote-unquote controversy last night with the illegal screen called in the final seconds to give the ball back to Iowa after, well, on their way to advancing to a second straight national championship where they'll play South Carolina tomorrow. Van Winks, I want to start with the elephant in the room, the hot topic. The I say now quote-unquote controversial call, because I've changed my mind on this. Okay. What was your initial reaction to that call?
The initial reaction I had in real time was, I think they had the call right.
Really?
Honestly, yeah. Well, I mean, you saw the play in real time just there, right? Mm-hmm. It did take that one angle from the side in slow motion for me to see how far Aaliyah Edwards extended her body. In real time, you could kind of see it like, oh, that was close. But this angle, you can't tell quite because it's straight on, right? It's from the side. Here's the angle that for sure sold it to me.
See, look, that didn't sell it to me at all.
Really? Okay.
Because we're seeing it, if you're not watching the video here, we're seeing these angles from kind of behind the basket on the other side of the floor. I think you need to see it from the sideline to see how wide Edwards was. She was almost
maybe that's
splits.
Not the angle. Yeah, that's not quite the side angle, but
so,
that's...
I think this is part of the problem was because a lot of people came out and said that was a bad call, mm-hmm. including myself. I thought that was a weak call, not necessarily a bad call, but a weak call
in the moment. Okay.
Because of the way the broadcast covered it in live time. Now, if you go back to the live look at it and you have it from the side, and you're focusing in on it, yeah, sure, you can see that she's moving and she's wide, but I was not focused on her when I was watching this live. I was not looking at the screener. I was looking at the player with the ball, and then Paige Becker's coming off to what looked like was going to be a three-point shot or a drive to the baseline. So I didn't see it in real time. And then ESPN shows two replays, and one of them is a little wider, but again, it's from behind the basket on the other side of the court, so you kind of see her side profile. And then they show another one, which is almost a slow-mo, real tight, where you can't even see her legs.
Or her shoulder. She kind of extends that out, too, her elbow.
Sure, kind of a chicken wing elbow.
And that's to me what, in real time, was what I saw, was I kind of saw the extended out. And then you could kind of see, almost looks like she kind of shoves her. And yeah, actually, and the official that's there had a perfect angle on it. I mean, she's right in front of it. I mean, you could just see right here, right on the sideline. She is perfectly positioned to see that. It's right in front of her face. Mm-hmm. To me, I know you and I both posted clips on this afterwards. I said they got the call right. I know a lot of people are going to say you can't. You know, the ref's got to swallow that in the moment. I've seen more and more people. High level, high profile basketball commentators come out and say that they are supporting this call. They think they got it right in this moment. Because it would have been the opposite. You know, what if they did swallow it? Then Iowa fans would have been all up in arms about that. So,
sure.
It sucks for UConn. Incredible. I mean, gosh, for them to even be in that position, because they got that steal at midcourt to get that play and hit the three to get it within 1 point. And here's my thing, and I posted this after the game. I said, UConn had another chance to go and take, you know, tie the game or take the lead. Caitlin misses that free throw at the end of the game, and they had every opportunity to get the rebound, call timeout, get the ball at midcourt, and have 3-4 seconds left to make a shot. And they didn't get the rebound. They didn't box out. And Iowa comes out with the win, and they're heading back to the national championship game.
I've come around on that call. As I mentioned, I tweeted out that it was – initially I tweeted out that it was a weak call, and that was when I had not seen it from the sideline angle, zoomed in, slowed down. And we didn't see that angle until people on Twitter started clipping it off and showing it. Like, I didn't even see that angle when I was watching the post game and the SVP Sports Center, and most people that were on thought it was a bad call, or at least a weak call, or a call that shouldn't have been made at that point in time in the game. But the more clips I watched, and look, we have the benefit of the doubt of doing this. These officials are on the floor making it bang, bang, right there. And then I woke up this morning, and I watched it with a clear head a few more times. And I'll admit, I was wrong. It was not a weak call. It was the right call, period. You cannot be that wide. Forget everything she does with the upper body. Mm-hmm. You cannot be that wide on a screen. Not even...
Correct.
Your legs are not supposed to be more than shoulder width apart. She was basically doing the splits to get Gabby Marshall. It was the right call. It needed to be made regardless of the situation.
And I got the official rule from the NCAA pulled up. Per Rule 10, Section 5, Article 4, no player while moving shall set a screen that causes contact and delays an opponent from reaching a desired position. It was pretty much a textbook illegal screen.
No player while moving. She was moving. She extended her leg. Her legs were twice the shoulder width. Maybe three times the shoulder width. And that was the only way she was going to catch Gabby coming around there. So kudos to that officiating crew. I don't know if it was a well-officiated game all in all. I know Gino had some things to say about that afterwards that we'll hear. But it was, bottom line, a foul.
Yes.
And it was called. Caitlin makes the first free throw. Now, I am not of the... of the school that will say UConn screwed up by not boxing out. I thought that the way that ball missed, it was a complete brick. It would have been really hard, even with great box outs, for UConn to get the rebound on that free throw. I mean, that thing came flying off the back of the rim over the heads of the UConn players. I don't know, even with the best box out, if UConn gets that rebound. But as you mentioned, get the rebound, call timeout, advance it up the court as you can do in women's basketball, which I love, and they would have another shot to win this game or tie it and send it into overtime. You've got the shot right here. Brick. I mean, that thing bricked out to 10 feet. Free
almost
throw line's
right,
15
almost came
feet.
Back to her.
it would have. I think it would have landed at the feet of Caitlin Clark if nobody else was there. That thing bricked back 15 feet if it would have landed, 10 feet in the air to Hannah Stolke. And then, how about the genius play that Caitlin Clark made on the inbounds? These are things. The first person I saw do something like this was Michael Jordan. In the 90s for the Bulls. Player turns his back. He throws it off the player's back. I think Scottie Pippen did it too. Throw it off the player's back. Get it. Put it in. This wasn't that. But it was along those lines. There was... How much time was left on the clock when Iowa was inbounding? 0.7?
0.8, I think, yeah.
So she knew, as soon as this hits somebody and they don't catch it, they don't gain control, this game is over. So she throws it off the back of a player, and that was it. That was all she needed to do in that instance. and Iowa wins
point,
the game. Iowa
1.1. 1.1 seconds
there
left.
There was 1.1 on the clock when she did
yes.
that?
Yeah, and I think they took off 0.3, so it was 0.8 left, but still.
No. I are you sure? Go back to that. I want to say there was like 0.8, 0.7 or 0.8. She threw it off the back of the player, and there was 0.1 on the clock after that.
Let me look real quick. Yeah, 1.1 is what I see.
Let me see. Play it. Let's see it here. So Clark gets the ball.
And then they reviewed it. They reviewed it.
Okay. It went out of bounds with 0.1. They reviewed it, put a little bit more time on the clock, but which they shouldn't have. But a genius play by Caitlin Clark. You brought up an interesting point. Oh, Iowa almost blew that game.
Mm-hmm.
They were up 10 points. I had already had it in the win column. I had already moved on mentally. And I'm not saying the players did, but to be able to rebound after almost blowing that entire lead, turning it over, UConn's got it with a chance to end your season and end the careers of many of these players, including Caitlin Clark, to be able to stop that runaway train in the final seconds and save that victory says a lot about the fortitude of this team. Because when UConn had that ball on that last possession, well, which could have been the last possession before the foul, I thought UConn was going to make a bucket there and win the game.
The fact, too, let's jump back to even just the first half, the fact that Iowa was only down by six points at halftime.
That was the key, and I don't know how they did it. Hannah Stolke was great.
Yeah,
Caitlin was really struggling on both ends of the floor. There were multiple instances where she didn't even get a hand in the face of her defender or of the person she was defending who made the three. I think it was Mule. Made a couple of threes. Caitlin was just not – I don't know what it was. It's not that she wasn't ready. She was clearly ready. But she came out in the second half as a different player. And immediately in that second half, boom, 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 six-point deficit turns into a toss-up game. Tie game, Iowa up one. And then it's a brand-new game. I thought the first half was as bad as it could have been for Iowa.
Yeah,
because they were really slow to put any kind of offensive pressure on UConn and start to get them in foul trouble. Such a thin team.
Yeah,
that was one of the keys to this game. And eventually they did start racking up some fouls. But gosh, how about Hannah Stolke in that game?
So good. Needed her in the worst way, especially too when, you know, in that first half, how many turnovers did Iowa have? 12?
Oh, I think they had a bunch of 12 or 13 in the first half.
And that's
Clark had like four of them.
You had the opportunities.
And they couldn't get out in transition.
Yeah.
They just looked stuck in the mud. But at the same time, you looked up, and because of the damage that Stolke was able to do inside, just kind of plodding away, keeping them tight.
Well, and especially with Edwards in foul trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Edwards was in foul trouble, and they knew that they could kind of go after her. And that's what Stolke did, man. She was so good. Sydney Falter had another great game.
Mm-hmm.
She cleans up things that, man, she gets rebounds. She seems like she's always in a good spot. And how about Gabby Marshall had a really tough shooting game and then comes up with a huge, huge three there late in the fourth quarter.
And always doing her thing on defense, too. Like,
yes,
it might not show up in the stat column, but always getting it done and putting UConn in position to make the game-ending foul.
Kate Martin, great game. After she got her nose swiped, had to go to the locker room, bloody nose, blood all over her shirt, her jersey, and she hit a really tough kind of turn-away, fade-away shot there. Just big-time plays from big-time players who have been there, been to the national championship game, and man, I don't know if you want to get to. I have a couple of these sound bites pulled up.
Yeah, let's hear them.
Because
I think a lot of people
just about that foul.
It was late, so I think a lot of people maybe they hung around on Twitter for a little while, but a lot of people probably went to bed before listening to all the post game coverage. So let's hear a little bit from. Are you going to start with UConn?
Yeah, we'll start with Paige Beckers here talking about the foul call and just the game overall?
I thought we executed it well. We were going to get a shot off. The whistle blew. I didn't see it. It was in the rear of me. I was just trying to come off the screen. Everybody can make a big deal of that one single play, but not one single play wins a basketball game or loses a basketball game. I feel like there was a lot of mistakes that I made that could have prevented that play from even being that big or causing the game. So you can look at one play and say, oh, that was like, that killed us or that hurt us, but we should have done a better job. I should have done a better job of making sure we didn't leave the game up to chance like that and leave the game up to one bad call going our way and that deciding it. So, yeah, maybe that was a tough call for us, but I feel like I could have done a better job of preventing that from even happening.
What did you make of the illegal screen call there at the end?
I mean, there's probably an illegal screen call you could make on every single possession. I just know there were three or four of them called on us, and I don't think there were any called on them. So I guess we just got to get better at not setting illegal screens.
Becker's handled that question a lot better than Gino did. I'm so impressed with Becker's at the microphone.
Same.
Taking responsibility. She was not very good in this game. And give a lot of credit to Iowa for that. She was at a superstar level going into this game. I mean, you go back to, it started in early March against Providence. Let me just rattle off the point totals for her in the last seven games leading into this one. 29, 27, 27, 28, 32, 24, 28. Last night, 17. She was consistently in these previous games in the tournament having double-doubles with double-digit rebounds. This game, 4. Only had 3 assists. Every other game in the tournament and every game she has played the last 7 games going into this one, she had at least 3 steals. This one, 0. And 4 turnovers. So, Becker's, I'm sure, is going to be kicking herself for a long time about this, but give credit to the Iowa Hawkeyes for, because if Becker's is on, if Becker's is having one of her games that she's had, that's probably a 12-point game at halftime and a totally different game.
That game had no business being that close in the first half. It kind of actually, you know, being the Iowa State guy, it kind of reminded me of Iowa State playing Washington State in the NCAA tournament, that second round game where Iowa State just could not buy a bucket. I think they had it within 2 points. Can't remember if it was tied, 2 points, 2-3 points at halftime. And you knew they were going to do something in the second half. It wasn't going to be that same story. And that's exactly what Iowa did. My question for you, Hassel, is this Iowa defense underrated? They've played some really good games lately. I mean,
it's beating
LSU. I mean, LSU, that you give up 87 points, but that's just a great LSU team. They're going to get theirs. They held Colorado to 68. West Virginia game stands out to me just as that's when we kind of saw Iowa really kind of buckle down and say, we're not going to let people run all over us, right? Gave up 54 points, and just that game was just kind of a boxing match, right? That's where I really got impressed by this team and saw that, okay, they're ready for the tournament. They're ready for this moment. And as good of an offense as they have, they really have been impressive defensively in this tournament.
And it kind of leads to a bigger question. Have we not given Caitlin's supporting cast enough credit? There are times when I'll watch this team and I'll wonder, how the hell did Clark get this team to another Final Four? That was in the first half, I think, last night. And then there are times where it is clear that this is just a really well-rounded team. Lisa Bluter didn't do anything in the portal. Thought that was going to really hurt Iowa. Thought that was going to bite them. And maybe it will in the championship game against South Carolina. But they have made it all the way back. They have just knocked off Kim Mulkey and Gino Auriemma in back-to-back games. They knocked off the defending champs. They knocked off women's basketball's perennial power, who had what many people were saying, Paige Beckers was playing better than anybody in the country going into this game, including Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark was one of Iowa's worst players in that first half. Her team kept her in that game, kept Iowa within shouting distance, and then Clark goes into that mode in the second half. You knew it couldn't end like that, right? Because I think a lot of people were asking themselves at halftime, it's not really going to end like this. Can it? With Caitlin Clark having an off game, a completely off game?
Yeah.
No. Second half comes around, and she turns it on again.
I'll tell you what helps get her kind of out of those funks, too. She's really good at driving to the hoop.
Yeah.
And when she's not, there were times in that first half where I'm like, just drive. Go after him.
What wasn't and being aggressive enough on the dribble?
She just looked off. Just looked off in that first half. And I don't know if, I mean, when she misses a few shots, maybe it gets to her a little bit. But, man, and you're right, in that second half, she flipped that switch, and you called it. She wasn't going to let that happen again. Hit a big three to start that third quarter. And then from there, you're right, that supporting cast. Man, you got to give so much credit to Hannah Stolke. They're going to need her, obviously, in this game against South Carolina to have a big game. Her and Caitlin are going to need to be the two focal pieces. Can you kind of preview this game coming up on Sunday for us? What do you know about South Carolina? what should we know? Obviously, they've got one of the best players in the country other than Caitlin Clark. But
well, yeah, Camila Cardoso, 6'7". She is going to be a top five, maybe top three pick in the WNBA draft. I think a lot of Iowa fans, if they hadn't seen a lot of South Carolina this season until last night, probably checked into at least the second half of that game last night against NC State, and she just dominated. I don't know. I don't know what Iowa is going to do. We didn't know what they were going to do last year against South Carolina. It was an 11.5-point spread last season against South Carolina, a team, in my opinion, and I don't think this is like a bold statement, but I've heard other people say the opposite. This South Carolina team is not better than the one they had last year. Not better than the star. I mean, they had star after star after star. This team was, I think, 7th in the preseason AP poll. Now, they've proven a lot of people wrong. They are great. They are undefeated. But I don't think they're better than they were last year. And Iowa beat them last year. And I think Iowa's playing every bit as well as they were playing last year. So that game plan, I think, will live forever. What they did against South Carolina last year when no one thought they could do it, and Iowa pretty much dominated the game. But you know, South Carolina, just like Iowa kind of had LSU circled, South Carolina has been waiting and hoping for this all season. This has been a team on a revenge tour, and now they're in the championship game against the team that knocked them out last year and the only team that has beaten this South Carolina team in the last 2 years. I think it's going to be really tough. I do not think Iowa was going to win the game, but I didn't think they'd beat LSU either. I think Caitlin Clark is going to have one of those special games. She's going to have to take the top off with some deep threes. They can't turn the ball over. Let's be honest. I mean, and I think everybody knows this. If Iowa plays like they did on Friday, they're going to get blown out by South Carolina. It's not going to be a six-point game at halftime. That thing's going to be over.
Yeah, just looking at the box score from last year, 77-73. In the final four, Caitlin goes 15 of 31. Only five threes, though. Five threes, six for six from the free throw line, 41 points. And Monica Sinano is the second highest leading scorer for Iowa at 18 points. That's going to have to be your Stolke, right? Your second contributor there. So, man, it should be a really fun matchup. I'm curious to see what the TV numbers were for the UConn game. I actually really think it'll be close to that LSU game.
I think it will be too. I think all of us were kind of on the same wavelength predicting that it wouldn't break the record that Iowa just set in the Elite Eight against LSU of 12.3 million average, that it would be somewhere between 10 and 12. But the way that game went down, how tight it was in the end, Iowa losing at halftime. So maybe this is your last chance to see Caitlin Clark. I think it is going to be really close. And I do think, no matter what the number was last night, that Sunday against South Carolina is going to set another record.
No doubt. Our friends at DRF Sportsbook have it as a 6.5-point spread for South Carolina here in this game.
It's 6.5. Interesting, because going into last night's games, there were look-ahead lines that had Iowa as only a 3.5 to 4-point underdog. So last night, I think, shifted some thought. How good South Carolina looked.
Yeah.
And Iowa, you know, struggling for a lot of that game. 6.5, that's tough. I don't know where I would go. I guess I would take the points. If you're going to give me 6.5 with Caitlin Clark, give
them
to me. Absolutely. But I'm not going to pick Iowa to win this game. We're going to have much more of a preview on this game when we go live tomorrow, Sunday. It'll be Chris Williams and myself on Two Guys with Aiden Wyatt filling in for Matty Van Hwinks, who won't be able to make it tomorrow. What time did we decide on for Sunday? I think I wrote it down.
Did you guys say?
Yeah, 11 a.m. Central. We're going to go 11 a.m. Central time. Full Two Guys pod presented by Fairway and the Channel Seed Studios. Williams couldn't join us today because he is at a kid's birthday party.
Is he dressed up as a clown? Is he the clown? Oh, no.
He's a Psy clown. That's what he is.
He's in the Psy-Nato costume. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. The April Fool's costume.
Well,
thanks for coming on, Van Wicks.
Yeah,
that
this was fun.
This
game went so late, like you said, and there were so many people just... I put that comment out on Twitter, and it's gotten over like 200,000 impressions, and I think yours had a similar reaction where people are just wanted to talk about this game, and I was glad we were able to do it for a little bit before. Man, you get right to the championship game on Sunday, but again, you said you and Williams will be live tomorrow, 11 a.m. Central.
Yes, it'll be, what is that? That's pretty close to tip. What's tip? It's 2 Central tomorrow?
2 o'clock, yep.
And I am flying to Phoenix for the men's championship game a little bit later in the day tomorrow, so we're not going to have our regular Monday morning show. I think Williams is working on something, some kind of reaction to the championship game, maybe something with him and Miller.
Yep.
So look forward to that. Look forward to tomorrow. We appreciate everybody joining us here on a very special edition. We'll do this every year, Van Winks. Every year that an Iowa basketball team makes a national championship game, we will have a special show for that. Does that sound fair?
I'll tell you what. You got to have faith in what Lisa Bluther's doing over there in Iowa City. So she's got a good one in Stolke, and we'll see if she can build around that in the coming years. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. You got another championship game to watch tomorrow. So
you might have seen it on my Twitter feed yesterday from St. Ambrose University, where Lisa Bluter started her college coaching career as like a 22-year-old. She led the Queen Bees to back-to-back Final Four appearances in NAIA play back in 89 and 90. So this is the second time she's gone back-to-back, but she's never won at all. Not in the NAIA, not in the NCAA. A chance to do that on Sunday afternoon in what should be another record audience. All right, thanks, Van Winks.
Yep.
Have a good one. Thanks to everybody for tuning in on Iowa Everywhere. It's Two Guys special edition today as the Iowa women go for a national championship on Sunday against South Carolina.
Iowa Everywhere.